From News Talk 580 KMJ, this is the Maddie Report, Valley Views Edition. Here is Mark Kepler.
This week on the Maddie Report, Valley Views Edition.
While California's high-speed rail appears to be ready to start construction on the initial 29-mile segment from Madera to Fresno, there are critics who charge that the bidding process is flawed, delays and cost overruns will only mount, and the money will never be there to build it. As a result, they want to stop high-speed rail in its tracks. Supporters, such as Governor Brown, say it is a critical piece of California's future infrastructure and must be built, beginning in the San Joaquin Valley. We'll examine what is happening as the first segment is about to be built, and we'll discuss some of the short and long-term challenges that could delay or derail California's bullet train with Mike Brady, one of the attorneys representing the Hanford residents who want to stop high-speed rail, and Jeff Morales, the CEO of California's High-Speed Rail Authority.
We'll also hear from Fresno Bee editorial page editor Bill McEwen, Seth Nydeaver, reporter with the Hanford Sentinel, and Tim Sheehan, reporter with the Fresno Bee.
High-speed rail. Will it be derailed?
From Fresno, the Maddie Report, with Executive Director of the Maddie Institute, Mark Kepler.
The project of the largest high-speed rail is bound to stir some controversy. The responsibility of our guest, Jeff Morales, the CEO of the High-Speed Rail Authority, is to make sure it doesn't derail in the process. So welcome to the Maddie Report.
Thank you.
Well, why don't you give our audience a quick update on the current status of high-speed rail?
Sure. Well, we've had a very busy, productive year over the last year. Last summer, we got the green light to move ahead with the project. The legislature approved the first funding to move into actual design and construction of the project. We've moved ahead very aggressively since then. We've received our first environmental approvals. We got federal approval to begin construction of the program. We've worked with stakeholders to settle some of the lawsuits that were out there and work through those issues. We've begun work with our partners on the peninsula to electrify the Caltrain corridor and are working in Southern California with our partners to invest in rail there. And we've awarded our first major design-build contract for construction in the Central Valley, so we are underway.
That's that 29-mile segment from Fresno to
Madera,
essentially.
Right,
okay.
Yes.
It was reported recently that you reached an agreement with Union Pacific. What does that cover?
Union Pacific is one of the two railroads that is along our alignment throughout the state, and so we have to reach agreement with them to ensure that we can do our work safely and on a timely basis, and also that we can keep their operations up and running during all of that. So we had to work through agreements with them to ensure that all of that commerce can keep moving.
You know, there was a concern several months back that no deal had been struck with Burlington Northern Santa Fe, BNSF, mm-hmm. which operates a freight line, I guess, along most of the 130-mile route in the Central Valley. Is there any progress on that?
Yes, we are working with the BNSF as we had with the Union Pacific. We're working through the details. I expect that we'll have an agreement with them very shortly and in time for us to begin work.
Yeah, people, I think, were a little surprised by that because the BNSF had been generally supportive of the project. Was that your understanding, at least initially?
Yeah, this isn't a question of support or opposition. I think they need to make sure that they're looking out for their interest in terms of their operating concerns, their long-term concerns about expansion. So it's really just a matter of working through those issues. There's no opposition or no reason to be concerned.
The authority recently approved $69 million to relocate utility cables on the 29-mile Fresno-Madera segment. Was this a surprise? Was this already in the budget?
Now, this was always built in and always assumed. Anytime you're building any sort of infrastructure project, a road, a rail, anything, there are utilities in the way, whether it's...
You find surprises.
You find surprises, and, well, hopefully not too many. You find some, certainly, but we also know that there are, you know, electric lines out there, gas lines, other water lines, things like that, and those all have to be either moved or temporarily or permanently, and so we budget that into the process.
It's kind of like remodeling a house, right? You take down a wall and you find things you didn't expect.
We try to minimize the surprises. But right, you never know what might be out there.
The authorities board also recently approved establishing a contingency fund of $160 million to cover potential cost overruns for unanticipated expenses and risks. Does this mean you're concerned about cost overruns?
No, we have really what is a state-of-the-art program for risk management to identify things that we may encounter during the course of construction that can't necessarily be quantified at the front end of the process. And we identify those risks, determine how real the risks are, and assign a value to them. And then we work to manage them. That's what that contingency fund is. Every public works project has a contingency attached to it. That's what our board just approved. It just allows us to manage the program.
So they put like a certain percentage of money aside for the what ifs, just in case?
Exactly, because as you've noted, you know, you can't predict everything that's out there. And so there are always unknowns that come up during the course of a project. Our job is to manage those unknowns as much as possible.
You know, initially there was some concern about the institutional capacity of the authority, basically staffing.
Right.
How has that issue been addressed?
That's something we've moved very aggressively on, and it was a concern last year, certainly when the legislature voted. We have, over the course of the last just over a year, grown from about 24 people to 80. We've brought on some very highly specialized technical people. One of them, for instance, the former chief engineer for Amtrak nationally, is now part of our program. We filled out our entire team. We have people out in the field, and that's paid real dividends in our relationships with stakeholders and other things.
Okay. Well, while high-speed rail tries to stay on track, there's a lawsuit that's been filed to try to stop high-speed rail in its tracks. The conversation with the attorney who filed that lawsuit in a moment. This is the Maddie Report. Our next guest is Mike Brady, the attorney representing the Hanford plaintiffs who are suing to stop high-speed rail. Welcome to the Maddie Report.
Thank you very much.
Well, first question is, what is the basis for your lawsuit? What are your claims?
Well, we started this lawsuit back in November 2011. We had been trying to get high-speed rail starting in 2009, 2010 to comply with the law that was passed in 2008 to no avail. And so we were forced to come into court and file this lawsuit trying to get them to comply with the provisions that we were claiming were violated. So what our lawsuit is, it's divided into two parts. Part one alleges two particular violations of Prop 1A, and then a later part, which will be tried in about 6 months, is the taxpayer standing part, and that involves six more violations.
What are the two claims that you're making?
Yes, those two that have already been ruled on by the judge in our favor. One is environmental and one is funding. The funding one is probably the most important because Prop 1A said that the authority can't start construction until they have all the money in the bank sufficient to complete the whole segment that they selected. So they selected a segment back in November that goes all the way from Merced to the San Fernando Valley in Los Angeles County. That costs $31 billion. But all they have to spend on it, all the money that they have committed, is $6 billion, only 20% of what they need. The reason they can't get more than six is because Prop 1A says no money can come out of Prop 1A unless there's matching funds. There's only $3 billion in federal funds, so only $3 billion can come out of Prop 1A. So the judge on August 16 issued a ruling saying you're in violation of that provision. You don't have the money that you need to have before you can start. And we hope that he's going to say they can't start. The second part of the ruling of the judge on August 16 that is in our favor, it concerns environmental. The legislature very wisely said, look, as of November of 2011, you have to have completed all the environmental clearances for the whole 300-mile segment that you selected. You have to have completed them all. The authority rather arrogantly said, well, we can't do that, but we promise you we'll have finished them all, have completed all the environmental clearances before we start construction. The judge said, that's not sufficient.
Okay, so this judge ruled in your favor. So
he did.
But he didn't stop the project. He asked both sides to submit arguments about what legal remedies they'd want for the violation. So what kind of remedies are you asking for?
The remedies hearing is November the 8th. That's a very important hearing. And remedies means what is the judge going to order? Now that he has found violations, he did find that these two matters I mentioned, environmental and funding, were violations. The remedy would be what order is he going to issue? And we have asked him to issue, in effect, an injunction preventing the authority from starting any construction, preventing the authority from spending any money, preventing the authority from spending any money on construction, preventing the authority from entering into any contracts that provide for the building of the high-speed rail project until the authority satisfies the judge that they have complied with Proposition 1A and have cured the violations that the judge said existed.
But you, they could still spend the money on land acquisition and project design, correct?
They could still spend some of the money provided they don't reach a cap. There's a cap or a ceiling on what they can spend for those activities. But we're even asking the judge to enjoin some of those activities for reasons that are set forth in the briefs that have been filed.
Perhaps a silly question, but is there any room for compromise here, or is this an all-or-nothing situation?
Well, you know, we, for about a year and a half, we tried to get the authority to comply with the law. Because, after all, the whole purpose of this suit is just to make the state comply with its own laws. And they just refused to do so in eight different respects, or eight separate violations that are part of this suit. So I don't see a basis for compromise. They, every time you try to get them to comply, they just ignore you. In fact, after the judge's ruling in our favor on August 16, the governor announced it makes no difference, we're going ahead with the project, and the head of the authority said this decision doesn't apply to us. I don't know how he could say that, but that's what he said.
What if the judge doesn't stop the project or doesn't give the remedy that you're seeking, the injunction? What's your next move?
Well, we have a very important phase of the case, which will probably go to trial in about 6 months. Some of the same issues will be tried in that because those parts of the case are somewhat different. They have a different burden of proof and so forth. And then there are entirely separate violations that are involved. And we may have a jury trial, which would be interesting in that phase of the case. But just to give you one example, Proposition 1A says no subsidy can be provided for operating costs for this high-speed rail. Now, every high-speed rail system in the world gets a massive government subsidy. How is California's going to be any different? And if they can't prove that they're not going to get a subsidy, they can't build it. The other very important part of that case says you have to be able to get the passenger from L.A. to San Francisco in 2 hours and 40 minutes. To do that, they have the train. Their chief engineer has the train coming down the Tehachapi Mountains down for 20 miles at 225 miles an hour. Now, I would like to ask your listeners, what passenger would get on a train going down a mountain at 225 miles an hour?
Well, I guess we're going to find out. I want to thank Attorney Mike Brady for joining us. Up next, we'll hear from the High Speed Rail Authority. What is their response? That conversation in a moment. This is the Maddie Report. We're rejoined by Jeff Morales, CEO of the High Speed Rail Authority. So how do you respond to the plaintiff's claims regarding lack of funding, incomplete environmental reviews, and that use of a blended system is going to violate Prop 1A? Yeah.
Well, we don't agree, obviously, with those.
Well, if you did, that would be news.
That would be news, yes. No, we're moving forward in a way that makes sense to implement a program like this and in accord with the requirements of Prop 1A and other laws that have been passed. We have funding in hand to build our first segment. That's what we're moving forward with. That's what we have the federal approvals for. We're complying with all the requirements of the law, and the blended system is something. Plan always called for slower speeds in the urban areas, up the San Francisco Peninsula, for instance. One of the things we did over the last year, which really makes a lot of sense for everyone, including the taxpayers, is look at ways to make this system work better, faster.
You saved
cheaper.
A lot of money using
we
that blended system.
We saved an awful lot of money. We would have spent, just for example, on the San Francisco Peninsula, to build a dedicated infrastructure of four dedicated tracks would have been something on the order of $12 to $15 billion.
I thought I had read it was about $30 billion total that you saved using
that we saved
system.
Off, right? By going to a blended system, and that, so what we're doing is electrifying the existing commuter rail line.
Could you briefly explain a blended system for our viewers, just so they understand?
Sure. The vast majority of our system will be dedicated new infrastructure, over which only the high-speed trains will run. In the urban areas, in the San Francisco Peninsula, for instance, we will share facilities with Caltrain, the existing commuter rail. But we will electrify that system and upgrade it in order to allow us to achieve the requirements we need there. But it's really making better use of existing resources, saving literally billions of dollars.
Now, the judge, you lost initially in this lawsuit that's been filed by the folks from Hanford, but he said he didn't stop the project. Right. He said he wanted the folks to come back and make some suggested remedies. What are you suggesting that the court do?
Well, first, I would take some exception with the idea that we lost. I think there was a ruling on one phase at one point of time in the project about the submission of an initial plan, which then ultimately was modified and considered by the legislature. And so when they ultimately voted, they were voting on something very different than what had been submitted. The process allows for that and assumes that. The judge made it very clear that the legislature has the authority to act, to modify the plans, and to appropriate the funds. The plaintiffs asked for him to stop the project based on that. He specifically said no. He said that he has no authority to inject himself in the legislature's business.
So what are you going to suggest the judge do?
Well, we believe there is no remedy because there was no wrong in that the wrong was corrected through the process. We're going to continue to comply with the law and make sure that this program can move forward in a responsible manner.
Again, I asked Mike this. I'll ask you the same question. Is there any chance for a compromise here, or is this an all-or-nothing situation?
I guess in light of what's going on in Washington these days, compromise is a tricky thing to come by. But we're always open to discussion and compromise. I think that's been evidenced. We had CEQA lawsuits in Merced and Madera counties that we settled by working with the affected parties and came to an agreement there. We've done the same thing elsewhere. So, I think the real question is, do the people on the other side, Mr. Brady and those, what are they really after? And I think if they want to stop the project, that's probably not something that can be compromised on. Our job is to move forward with the program that the voters approved.
What if the judge does something that you find just untenable? Then what?
We're still in the legal process. I'm not going to speculate on what he might do. We don't think... Again, we don't see things there that would be problematic for us. He said specifically he will not try to overturn the appropriation. We are moving forward very much in accord with what the legislature did.
What about this bond validation case that the same Superior Court judge is going to be hearing? What's that about? What is a bond validation case?
Sure. Proposition 1A, among other things, it set out the authority for the state to move forward and begin the construction of high-speed rail and authorize the issuance of bonds to do that, almost $10 billion worth of bonds altogether. The bond validation is an action to ensure that legal challenges to those bonds get heard and get heard at one time so that we can clear the issues and move forward and not be subject to repeated lawsuits.
Okay, what's the timeline on that? For the case and then the trial and the ruling?
There was a hearing a few weeks ago, September 27th, I believe it was. Judge Kenny here in Sacramento heard the case on that. A ruling should be coming out sometime in the next 90 days, roughly.
Okay. Well, when we come back, lawsuits aside, what's the future of high-speed rail? That conversation in a moment. This is the Matty Report. Welcome back. We're talking with Jeff Morales, CEO of the California High-Speed Rail Authority. Well, there have been repeated calls by Republicans to have a new statewide vote on high-speed rail. A recent USC LA Times poll found that 70% wanted the project to be placed back on the ballot, and that's up from 55% last year. So why shouldn't there be a new vote on high-speed rail?
Mark, I think what we're going through and what we see reflected in some of these polls are kind of the growing pains of actually implementing a project and what it takes to get it done. But it's really important to keep in mind the factors that were behind the passage of 1A in the first place, which voters have reaffirmed several times. The growth in population. Over the next few decades, we're going to be adding the equivalent of the state of New York to California. Our transportation systems are already clogged. They can't handle any more traffic. We're not going to double-deck I-5 or the 99. It's just not going to happen. We have to make investments like this in order to continue to grow as a state, in order to maintain our quality of life, That was reflected in the very same poll that talked.
Yeah, there was some good news there.
There was some good news. I think people said, again, the underlying reasons for moving forward, they still see them. They still believe them. I think our job is to continue to find ways to make this program more efficient, more effective, bring down costs, accelerate improvements.
Yeah, since I cited that one statistic against you, I want to be fair and cite the statistics for you, that 61% in that same survey said that they think it would help reduce traffic on highways and at airports, and 65% said they thought it would create jobs. So there was some positive news inside of that survey as well. Construction was scheduled to start at the end of 2012, then in early 2013, then in July, then in September. Still, nothing's really started. No dirt has been moved. So what do you say to those who question whether high-speed rail will ever get built?
Well, we're underway. We're under contract. We're underway. Our first major contract is a design-build contract, meaning the contractor has to finish up the designs before starting the work. Yeah, one thing I want to go back to your previous question a little bit, and you mentioned jobs, and it's a very important issue. Particularly in the Central Valley, where you look, the unemployment rate is 50% higher than the state average. It's about twice the national average. One of the things that this program will do is, for the first time ever, connect all of the population centers of the state together. Fresno, Bakersfield, with the Bay Area, with the LA region. Every other previous major infrastructure investment in the state has left out the Central Valley. This is a very important project for that and for the future of the state.
I want to ask you about eminent domain. There might be some property owners along the line that don't want to sell. So you go into eminent domain proceedings, but that could be a 1 or 2 year process as that gets taken care of. Is that going to make meeting the federal and state guidelines more difficult?
We've looked at that and taken that into account as we laid out our schedule. We're working through the right-of-way process through the acquisition of properties. We have procedures in place to streamline it. Our goal and our hope is to acquire as many of the properties as we can without having to go through an eminent domain process. It is a last resort for us. But we've worked through procedures to streamline that, make sure that people's rights are protected, that they're treated fairly, and that we are able to move forward on a timely basis.
You know, it's been noted that if construction starts on January 1st, 2014, to meet the federal deadline, you're going to have to spend $3.75 million a day, including weekends and holidays. And that would be the fastest rate of spending on a major construction project in U.S. history. So is that a realistic burn rate?
Well, I guess a few things. One, I'm not sure I'll vouch for the calculator, whoever made that calculation, but it's an aggressive one, but it is absolutely doable, and I would point to a few things is that, one, we had 5 world-class teams who bid on our program. Every one of them said they can accomplish it, and several of them said, in fact, ahead of schedule. One thing that's different about this program than what people may normally think of is we're talking about building over a very long stretch. So we could have, in effect, over a 30-mile stretch at this first project, 4 or 5 projects, in effect, going at the same time. So it's very hard to compare our project with a typical one.
You know, the House Transportation Funding Bill includes a Republican draft amendment that would require the Federal Surface Transportation Board to consider the project in its entirety rather than in segments. What would that mean for the project, and how does that impact your ability to secure private funding?
One of the cornerstones of the program has always been the involvement of the private sector, and we have very active interest from the private sector in being a part of this program. Anything that is done in Congress to arbitrarily, limit participation, and it certainly can have an impact, a negative impact on that. And so, we're working to see that doesn't happen. That's not helpful, and the project should stand on its merits.
Okay, we've only got 30 seconds left in the program. I want to ask you one last quick question. That is, what are the key dates going forward in 2014? What should people be looking for as a timeline?
Well, a number of things. The electrification of Caltrain will be proceeding forward. That'll be open in 2019 is the projected schedule. And the Central Valley will be under construction in the next few months as we go forward. We're beginning the process of advertising for our next major construction project. So things are happening.
Okay. Well, I want to thank Jeff Morales, CEO of the High Speed Rail Authority, and Mike Brady, the attorney representing the plaintiffs from Hanford, who are soon to stop High Speed Rail.
Up next, what's happening on the ground as the high-speed rail project attempts to build the first 29-mile segment in the San Joaquin Valley? We'll talk to Fresno Bee editorial page editor Bill McEwen, Seth Neidiver, reporter at the Hanford Sentinel, and Tim Sheehan, reporter with the Fresno Bee.
From News Talk 580 KMJ, this is the Matty Report, Valley Views Edition. Here is Mark Kepler.
Welcome back. Will the initial 29-mile segment be built in the Valley on time and on budget? We have three points of view on that question. Fresno Bee editorial page editor Bill McEwen, Seth Nightiver, reporter with the Hanford Sentinel, and Tim Sheehan, reporter with the Fresno Bee. So, Bill, let me start with you first. How do you think folks in the Valley generally, and Fresno in particular, feel about high-speed rail? Do they think it should be built, stopped, or modified?
So, Mark, when you say folks, that infers there's a common belief, and there's not a common belief. We have varying viewpoints on this, and if you look at the non-ag business community, there's a very strong support for high-speed rail, and the support comes from the fact that they believe the project will end the geographic isolation of the valley. They believe that'll put a lot of people to work, and there'll be high-paying jobs with good benefits. And there are those people in the business community who are thinking about, how can I profit from this? Then the other point of view among the non-farm community would be those that are being directly impacted by high-speed rail, and they may have to move their business and such. And so about a year ago, 18 months ago, there was a lot of opposition among folks that were being directly affected.
There's that word again, folks.
But there they are, and that seems to have quieted down a little bit. And it will quiet down further if the authority is fair in dealing with people, if the funds to help them move actually are produced and they're treated fairly. I would suspect some cases will end up in court, however. There'll be challenges on this. And then you have those in the ag community that just see their land being dissected. They don't see a need for it. They're in a more rural area. They also have a big mistrust of government. So we have varying views here in the Valley about
So what, Seth, what are the views in Hanford? I think we know some of the views. Are there folks in Hanford that are uniformly opposed to high-speed rail?
Well, I think it's fair to say that the vast majority of people in Kings County are probably against this. And, you know, as Bill was talking, he was mentioning the non-ag community. In Kings County, it really is all ag. So everything's sort of linked to ag or directly related to ag. And so I've only seen one or two people in all the public meetings I've been to actually say something in favor, strongly in favor of high-speed rail. And they were drowned out by a chorus of, in some cases, boos. The Kings County agricultural community is really not sold at all on any benefits of this project.
So what about the economic opportunity? People talk about the jobs that high-speed rail will bring. They don't see that in Kings County? They don't believe that?
Well, as undoubtedly there will be jobs created by high-speed rail, but in the ag community they see that as taking away ag jobs. So what they see is a loss of jobs. They don't see additional jobs because they don't believe those jobs will really be permanent in Kings County, whereas agriculture is the permanent sort of lifeblood of that whole area. So there is a different perspective, Fresno versus Kings County.
So let's talk about Fresno's perspective, Bill. Net gain in jobs, or do they see it also as kind of a fiscal boondoggle? What do you
think? I'm sorry, again, on the question, Mark?
On jobs and economic opportunity that high-speed rail may or may not bring. In Fresno, is there a different perspective on that?
Well, among some segment of the community. I mean, also in Fresno County, there are people that are strongly opposed to high-speed rail, and we've seen this debate play out many times. And one of the big things that's going on is people fact-check the high-speed rail authorities' projections. You know, how many permanent jobs will there be and those kinds of things. And the other great unknown is there has not been a decision made yet on the high-speed rail maintenance yard, and where that is located is going to really affect the economy, because if Fresno County gets it, you could say, boy, high-speed rail is good, and there are a lot of permanent jobs and that kind of thing. If it ends up in Merced County, Merced County is going to be the one doing the celebrating, and people in Fresno County are more likely then to say, hey, well, I don't know about this high-speed rail.
Kind of like the UC situation when they were trying to build it in Fresno and it ended up in Merced. Tim, let me ask you, there's been a lot of lawsuits over high-speed rail, but it doesn't appear that the authority is very worried about these lawsuits. Is their confidence justified?
You know, it's hard to tell. Until such time as a judge or someone in a position of authority is able to tell them definitively, no, you have to stop, they're going to plug ahead. So far, in the various lawsuits that have been litigated and are being litigated, no one has flat out said, you have to stop. It's been a matter of, we'll let you keep working while we decide this thing. One of the lawsuits, the one filed by Kings County, there's a portion of that that's going to have a hearing in November to decide a part of that, whether or not the plans comply or violate Prop 1A, and if so, what to do about it. There's another lawsuit that's currently pending in an appeals court up in Sacramento that's been filed by folks in the Bay Area who their main concern, it's an environmental lawsuit, to determine whether or not the current plan to run the line down the peninsula and through Pacheco Pass to get to the valley is appropriate, or whether it should have been Altamont Pass further to the north. And then you've got the High-Speed Rail Authority's own lawsuit to validate the sale of the bonds. And that is one that is likely to be decided here probably in the next month or so. A hearing on that was held last month. And so there's a decision being awaited in that. But so far, in none of these cases, has anybody flat out told the authority, no, you have to stop while we decide this.
Okay, so the lawyers are busy, Bill. Do you think Governor Brown maybe is hoping that the judge rules maybe against high-speed rail so it takes him off the hook? He could say, hey, I tried, and then he can move on to other things?
I don't think so at all, because the governor has the power, or certainly the political strength to have shut this down. To me, it's looking like he really believes in it. And you have to remember, High-Speed Rail Authority took a big hit, and he goes and remakes the authority and the people in charge, and the people he put in charge are his close political and business allies and people that he respects. So I don't think that he's going to send that caliber of person on a fool's errand. I think that Governor Brown is totally invested in this, and we've seen that at every turn. He stood by the project, you know, especially the idea of it. And I think the big thing that's motivating Governor Brown is he knows the reality of air travel in the state of California. You know, there's not a lot, many more airplanes that you can put in the skies of California, and we're going to need an alternative form of transportation.
I think sometimes one of the arguments you hear in high-speed rail is the cost of more lanes and more airport gates that they'd have to build, and something around, I think I saw the number around $200 billion or something. So their argument is that high-speed rail is more cost-effective. That, of course, is debated by some folks. Seth, I want to ask you about these lawsuits. I mean, doesn't matter, I guess, who wins, who loses. There's going to be whoever loses is going to appeal. So isn't this just going to keep going on and on and on?
That might be true, except in this Kings County lawsuit, there may be some sort of injunction to actually stop the process and prevent construction from starting. So that's certainly what the Kings County residents and the Kings County Board of Supervisors would like to see.
You know, it was interesting, when we were talking to Jeff Morales, he said the judge specifically did not grant an injunction initially in that case. So he's thinking that that's not going to happen.
Yeah, it's curious to me how the authority is proceeding almost as if this adverse ruling against them had never happened, in which this judge, Sacramento judge, said that their business plan violated Prop 1A. So it'll be curious to see how the judge responds to this sort of implied, I don't care what you say, I'm just going to proceed. And I tend to think that the judge is not going to look too kindly on that attitude.
Yeah, most judges I know want people to wait for their decision and not probably preempt them. Tim, let me ask you, what do you think? Do you think this 29-mile segment, this initial segment, is going to be built before we ever see a final resolution to these cases?
Not if an injunction issues, and of course that is the big question. You know, the Kings County lawsuit is over the whole statewide project. The bond validation case that the High-Speed Rail Authority brought will have a direct impact, depending on what the judge decides, on whether or not they can sell the bonds, which would finance this construction. And then you also have the pace at which work has progressed so far on this first 29-mile segment. There's still a chunk of that is subject to environmental approval, and that's everything south of downtown Fresno to American Avenue. there are going to be lawsuits over that Fresno to Bakersfield environmental segment. That just hasn't been approved yet. And, of course, the folks in Kings County are likely to be among the ones that are going to be suing under the California Environmental Quality Act with regard to that particular section. So, given the amount of time that it's going to take to build this section, 3 years or 4 years, I think at some point we will have resolution to these cases before that segment's completed. And in some cases, the resolution will determine whether or not this thing moves forward.
You know, it's interesting, and lawyers know that delay is a tactic. So whoever uses that to their advantage, I suppose. Seth, let me ask you this. Some people have stated, supporters of high-speed rail in particular, that really these lawsuits aren't about stopping high-speed rail. It's about gaining bargaining leverage in upcoming negotiations over the sale of the properties along the high-speed rail route. What do you think?
I really don't think that's the case, in Kings County at least. I think there is an absolute genuine conviction amongst the people who are behind the lawsuit that the project's bad and it violates the law, as stated in Proposition 1A. So I think they're going to pursue this thing to the end, and I don't think it's a bargaining chip.
You know, it's interesting. BNSF was very supportive of high-speed rail, and now all of a sudden they say, no, stop. We need to negotiate an agreement. Some people think that BNSF is doing that to get some leverage, more money out of the authority. Bill, what do you think? Are these lawsuits, whether it's BNSF not reaching an agreement or lawsuits being filed on high-speed rail, part of a bargaining game?
Well, and when we talk about bargaining game, that can be money, certainly, but also it can just be the way the line is constructed. And so, you know, you had the Madera County lawsuits, and High-Speed Rail Authority says, hey, we won. Meanwhile, the people on the Madera side are saying, yeah, but look at what we gained. And so clearly, I mean, anytime you have a lawsuit, there are multiple strategies involved. And, coming out better than you were going in is, the goal when you file these lawsuits. And so even in the cases where high-speed rail authorities won, the people who ostensibly are branded as losers have come away with something. So I think bargaining is always part of this. However, I don't doubt the sincerity of the people involved in these Kings County lawsuits. I mean, they're looking to stop this project in its tracks. Certainly, that's the bigger goal. Now, there may be a few parties involved who say, hey, you know what, we may not win, but we'll at least come away with something better.
Yeah. Tim, what do you think? I mean, they have reached an agreement with UP on part of the authority has.
Right.
But we still got this thing hanging out there with BNSF, and we've got these lawsuits. Mm-hmm. What do you think? Do you think BNSF is using this as a bargaining position? Maybe not the litigants from Hanford, but maybe BNSF might be doing that?
I think that's part of it. I think also BNSF and UP before them have a very legitimate concern about how high-speed rail potentially could affect their operations. Initially, the discussion or the idea that the High-Speed Rail Authority had was to try to share right-of-way where they could with either UP or BNSF. Now they've gone to, instead of that, running alongside their right-of-way. That is to say, where the BNSF property stops is where the High-Speed Rail Authority's property would begin. And, of course, some deviations where there's going to be high-speed curves that can't necessarily follow those BNSF tracks. But where the High-Speed Rail Authority is proposing to relocate some of BNSF's tracks or to cross over BNSF tracks, that's going to have a potential impact on their freight traffic and their ability to keep their trains running. And so there is a very tangible need for BNSF to make sure that all of their concerns are ironed out. So I think it is some leverage, and I think it is a combination of that and some legitimate concerns.
How long do you think it's going to take to work out all those issues?
Once the authority sets their mind to it and once BNSF sets their mind to it, I don't think it's actually going to take very long. Earlier this year, in fact, last month, the authority finalized an agreement with UP to essentially reimburse UP for its costs associated with potential impacts of relocating or building over or under or relocating tracks.
So if they did it with UP, they can do it with BNSF?
I think so, because UP's been far more recalcitrant about this.
Okay. Maybe they're trying to crack the tough nut first, maybe.
Perhaps.
Who knows? Well, up next, what are the long-term prospects for high-speed rail? That conversation in a moment. This is the Maddie Report, Valley Views Edition.
From News Talk 580 KMJ, this is the Matty Report, Valley Views Edition. Here is Mark Kepler.
Welcome back. We're talking about the long-term prospects of high-speed rail with Fresno Bee editorial page editor Bill McEwen, Seth Nydever, reporter with the Hanford Sentinel, and Tim Sheehan, reporter with the Fresno Bee. So, Seth, newly elected Hanford State Senator Andy Videk attempted to put high-speed rail back on the ballot, but he was quickly shot down in the Democratic-controlled legislature. But how did that play in Hanford?
Well, Andy knew as well as anyone else that his proposal was going nowhere. So it was basically a no. For him, it was simply about pleasing the folks back home, which, of course, he did. Any attempt to reconsider high-speed rail or put it back on the ballot, that's a huge plus in Kings County. I mean, they are clamoring for that, really. They would love to see it back on the ballot in some way, shape, or form, because their argument is that the situation now is completely different from 2008. The plan has changed. The economy has radically changed. The funding situation is far more crystal clear, and it's clear that the funding is not really there right now to build the first usable segment. So yeah, I think there are a lot of arguments along those lines.
You know, Bill, I'm thinking about maybe what the Republican Party generally in California might be thinking on this issue. I mean, they're looking at the polls, and there was a recent USC LA Times poll that showed that 70% of the Californians wanted it to go back on the ballot, and that's up from 55% a year ago. So is this something that's being done, promoted by the Republican Party as a way to show voters that they're listening to their interests?
Well, absolutely. But and it also gives them more ammunition, because before, what you're talking about is a prediction that this won't pencil and a prediction that it won't deliver as many jobs as promised. Now you're backing that with many, many Californians wish they could have a redo on this. So, you know, it's another arrow, you know, if you will. And with Andy Videk, you know, there's predictions that because the district is going to be redrawn, that he could face a tough fight when he goes for reelection. And so this is a way to keep his name out there. It's a way for him to be popular with constituents in Kings County. And it keeps high-speed rail on the burner of public debate.
Yeah, kind of like this program, actually. Well, Tim, let me ask you about this. You reported about that, quote, uncertainty over the fate of high-speed rail is casting a shadow on a 2014 economic and employment forecast for the Fresno region, according to a report issued by the University of the Pacific. What were their findings?
Well, the Business Forecasting Center at UOP put out a report estimating that that job growth in the Fresno metropolitan area is expected to be somewhere in the neighborhood of 1.6% in 2014. Elsewhere in other Northern California metro areas, Sacramento, Modesto, Stockton, it's more like 1.9 to over 2%. Jeff Michael, the economist who put together the report, basically said that the uncertainty over the high-speed rail and the litigation and the potential that it may not happen caused him to not include potential economic benefits in his 2014 forecast. What he told me is that essentially if there were more certainty that high-speed rail were to occur, he would expect that the growth rate would be more along the lines of 2% in 2014 as opposed to 1.6%.
Seth, are they reading that same report in Hanford?
Well, they are if they're reading the Hanford Sentinel, which is another question.
But we believe they are.
I'd like to think so, of course. That report went on, basically UOP went on to say that they don't believe that high-speed rail will actually be built. They don't believe the money will be available. It's certainly not available now. So they gave it a very negative forecast. And they also included the twin tunnels in their report, and they said that they predicted that this Delta proposal to build tunnels under the Delta as a water conveyance system will also not be built for the same reasons.
Laura. Wow. Okay, so they're not very optimistic about
not
some
at
big
all.
Projects
yeah.
in California. I think Dan Walters wrote a column a little while ago on the same thing. Tim, at one point, High-Speed Rail Authority was supposed to give Fresno, the city of Fresno, $4.6 million to set up a one-stop shop inside City Hall. Did that ever happen? And if so, what's going on down there?
It did happen. There is a agreement between the city and the High Speed Rail Authority for that $4.6 million. And what that essentially is doing is underwriting the city's efforts to provide no-cost permit processing for businesses that are affected by high-speed rail within the city. So, which is to say—
When you say affected, do you have to be right against the line or on the line, or can you be a little bit away from the line?
It's any business that is going to be displaced. So if part of your parking lot is chewed up and lost to the high-speed rail acquisition, they will process permits to redo or move or expand your parking lot into a different area at no charge for the permit processing. Same thing if you have to relocate and rebuild or reopen somewhere else. Conditional use permit processing would be done for those businesses at no charge through the city. And that's what this money is being used for by the city.
Bill, are you hearing anything about this one-stop shop?
Well, I know this is Catherine Perez Estolano, and she was here in Fresno for Forest Cities, a project that ultimately didn't happen. And she's with a different company.
You're not saying that's a precursor, are you?
No. But, she's been here. She knows the area. And she's with a different company now. She was on Mayor Swearingen's infill financing committee about downtown revitalization. She's also on the high-speed rail authority. And she was at the B recently for an editorial board meeting on downtown revitalization. But she mentioned in her capacity with High Speed Rail Authority that the authority was looking at giving Fresno more money to for help with high speed rail.
Well, I want to ask you, Bill, there was a UC professor, an engineering professor, who commented that the high speed rail project, quote, was not as shovel ready as they thought it was, unquote. So there's been lots of fits and starts with what seems like with high speed rail. All these initial groundbreaking dates seem to be moved back. Do you think they're ever going to break ground on high-speed rail?
Am I Karnak? I don't know, because what you're asking me to do is predict what a judge is going to do. And when you're talking about government and American democracy, no one has as much independence as a judge. And so what they do is they read the law and then they apply it as they think it needs to be applied within, their framework of learning and their life experiences and everything else. So, with this initial thing where we didn't see an injunction granted, but a judge is saying, boy, it sure looks like they're not living up to what was promised in the proposition. You know, this is key, and we're going to have to see with what he comes up with. Because, if he absolutely believed it, there would have been an injunction granted. And that didn't happen. So there was a little bit of King Solomon going on. And, you're having these hearings. And I think people are awaiting the decision. And whatever decision he gives, of course, if high-speed rail is the loser, there will be an appeal.
Well, Seth, you're not Karnak, but I'm wondering, have you visited Madam Sophie on Route 99 and asked her whether or not high-speed rail is going to happen? What do you think? And do you have any – can you look into a crystal ball and give us a kind of a prediction of what you think is going to happen here?
Well, I think it should be said that sometimes it seems like the High-Speed Rail Authority is spending as much effort on public relations as they are on actually planning the project, because they keep issuing press releases saying, we're going to start construction in a few months. We're delayed. We're going to start construction. And it's been delayed and delayed and delayed. So it really is anybody's guess as to when or if they will actually, quote unquote, break ground on the project.
I've done some research, and what I've seen is that if they start the project on January 1, what I've read is that the authority is going to have to spend $3.75 million a day, including weekends and holidays, to kind of meet the federal goal of spending the money in time. That's a pretty fast burn rate. So, Tim, you've been looking at this issue quite a bit. What do you think? Is it in the cards? You think it's going to be built?
I'd say it's a toss-up question right now. The rail authority is continuing to work, and one of the things that the judge's decision or that the judge's partial ruling in the Kings County lawsuit did indicate is that there are certain things that they could still spend money for under Prop 1A, that they didn't completely...
Things like?
They didn't completely run the red light on 1A. They can continue spending money for planning, engineering, which is work that is going on now. They can continue to spend money on property acquisition, mm-hmm. which they're working on their right-of-way buying plans here in the Fresno area and Madera area. But in terms of whether they actually begin construction, I'm with Bill. It just depends on what the judge decides ultimately on these remaining pieces of these lawsuits.
All right. Well, I want to thank our guests, Fresno Bee editorial page editor Bill McEwen, Seth Nightiver, reporter with the Hanford Sentinel that a lot of people read, and Tim Sheehan, reporter from the Fresno Bee. Thanks all for joining us. If you want to keep up to date with state and local politics, you can sign up for our free e-newsletter, The Maddie Daily, by just logging on to our website at maddieinstitute.org.
The Maddie Report Valley Views Edition is a public affairs partnership between KMJ Radio and the nonpartisan Maddie Institute, providing the Valley with valuable insight and analysis on important public policy issues.
This is Mark Kepler for The Maddie Report Valley Views Edition. Thanks for joining us.